Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or for society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. I grew up in a working-class family in a small factory town in Iowa. Vacations when I was a kid meant going with mom and dad to spend a weekend with relatives in an adjacent state. Some years, that meant going to visit Uncle John and Aunt Sally down at their kennel in eastern Missouri. I remember this one time in particular. It was 1974. We were all up in the family room watching TV. The president was going to address the nation. It was a hell of a speech. Here, let's listen to the first part.
Good evening. This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of this nation. Each time I have done so to discuss with you some matter that I believe affected the national interest. In all the decisions I have made in my public life, I have always tried to do what was best for the nation. Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. As long as there was such a base, I felt strongly that it was necessary to see the constitutional process through to its conclusion, that to do otherwise would be unfaithful to the spirit of that deliberately difficult process and a dangerously destabilizing precedent for the future. But with the disappearance of that base, I now believe that the constitutional purpose has been served, and there is no longer a need for the process to be prolonged. I would have preferred to carry through to the finish, whatever the personal agony it would have involved. And my family unanimously urged me to do so. But the interests of the nation must always come before any personal considerations. From the discussions I have had with congressional and other leaders, I have concluded that because of the Watergate matter, I might not have the support of the Congress that I would consider necessary to back the very difficult decisions and carry out the duties of this office in the way the interests of the nation would require. I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first.
That was disgraced former President Richard Milhouse Nixon speaking to the nation on August 8, 1974. I remember looking over at my aunt while Dick was talking. She had tears in her eyes. My aunt was a diehard Republican, eventually became an evangelical, but that's another story. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we look back at the president who is most strongly associated with creating the war on drugs, disgraced former President Richard Milhouse Nixon. Now, say what you will about Richard Nixon. Yeah, no, seriously, go ahead, say what you will. Heck, I'll start, okay? Nixon was a hypocrite, a demagogue, a drunk, a bigot, a sexist, an anti-Semite, and a racist. I mean, can you imagine? How on earth did someone like that ever get elected president? Oh, right. Yeah, pretty easily, I guess. Anyway, we're going to take a look back at disgraced former president Richard Milhouse Dick Nixon, the father of the drug war. And what better way to start than with this next recording from May 13, 1971. This is a conversation in the Oval Office, along with Nixon are his advisors John Ehrlichman and H.R. Bob Haldeman.
We have a free and much offer. I what the country's going to be like when we want it to be like. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons that this particular drug, that's one of the reasons why I've come down hard and absolutely uncompromising. I'm against marijuana, period. I am against it. Why else should I say it? I saw Joe Bob the other day. I was trying to get him in the damn baseball game, and then CBS, the game went off, and CBS came on with the movie. One, they made themselves an hobby that got at the dance, and I heard that two magnificent, handsome guys and a stupid old fellow in a nice girl, and these, they were glorifying homosexuality. I mean, the guys were admitting they were homosexuals and so forth, and this other girl got some she was not. I don't know, this guy is blind. I said, and I think, is that what people listen to?
Yeah, a panel show?
No. Hell no, it's a movie.
No, that's a regular show. It's on every week. And usually it's just set in the guy's home. And yeah. It's usually just that guy who's a hard hat.
That's right. He's a hard hat.
He always just looks like a slob.
Looks like Jackie Gleason.
And then he has this hippie son-in-law.
Yeah.
And usually, the general trend of it is to downgrade him and upgrade
him. He's
not making the square hard hat out to be bad. But apparently, a couple weeks ago, they had an episode where the guy got, the son-in-law wrote a letter to you. He said, I'm writing President Nixon, and I'm going to raise hell about something or other. And the guy said, you will not write that letter from my home. No letter like that will be sent from here. And then he said, I'm going to write President Nixon. He went upstairs and took off all these sloppy clothes he wears all the time, got himself all dressed up, all cleaned up, shaved, and combed his hair and everything, and came back down, cleared his whole desk, got his paper out, and got ready to write his letter to President Nixon, which he did, and apparently it was a good episode, but most of them go this other way.
What's it called? I've never seen it.
Arch is the guy's name. But the point is, you can't imagine, for example, Arch is sitting here in his sloppy clothes, and here's his hippie son-in-law, who's married to a screwball-looking daughter, and and Archie said, and they said, well, Freddie or somebody is coming home, or no, John is coming home. And, you can't let him, Harvard said, you can't let him come in here. I mean, he's queer, he's a flower, and the hippie son-in-law said, nah, he really isn't. I think the son-in-law, obviously, was apparently going both ways, So the guy comes in the door, but he comes in, he's obviously queer, he wears an ascot and so forth, and he uses language, but he's not offensively so, very cleverly, and he comes in and uses the nice language and shows some pictures of his trip and all the rest, and Arch is there. So then Arch goes down to the local bar, and he's sitting around the bar, and his best friend, Arch's best friend, turns out to be a guy who, for 2 years, had played professional football as a linebacker. Who has a photo store down the way, and this guy's name is Freddie or something like that. God, he's handsome, virile, strong, and this and that. They're talking about this. And then this fairy comes into the bar, and the guy who's at the photo shop, sees the fairy, and, oh, how are you? And they shake hands and so forth. And the bartender over here immediately says, but then he just says, I just hope that I don't mind Freddie in here, but I hope that other guy didn't come back here with my back. See what this is all about. His hippie son-in-law said, look, you talk about Freddy. I said, Frank Freddy. Oh, he's why he played with the Bears. He goes back to the bar. He just talks to him. He says, gee, Frank, we've been friends for 20 years and 10 years. So this deal where you grasp it and you push forward. And he said, my that crazy son-in-law, he said, we got this bag that comes in the house. But he said, barrel guy. He says, go ahead, say hi, and she'll smile, a nice smile on his face. And he said, he thinks I'm that way too. And then, oh, gee, yes, but Carson said I do. But it's true, Arch. It's true. How long have you known? He said, 12 years. You ever seen him? He said, but you're a bachelor. He says, said, well, I know why you don't see her. No, it's true.
Well, that's real family entertainment, isn't it?
That was for the family. But the point of 30, I don't yes. I do not mind the homosexuality. I understand. But nevertheless, the point of it is that, goddamn, I do not think that you glorify on public television homosexuality. The reason you don't glorify it, John, any more than you glorify whores. Now, we all know people go to whores. We all know that people are do that. We all have weaknesses and so forth and so on. But goddammit, what do you think that does to kids?
Yeah.
What do you think it does to 11, 12-year-old boys when they see it? Why is it that the scout, why is it that the boys loved when we were there? We constantly had to clean up the staff to keep the goddamn fangs out of it. Not because of them. They go out and do anything they damn please. But you know, the boys don't want to spoil those kids. You know, there's a little tendency among them all. Well, I tell you, it outraged me. Not for any moralism. Most people outrage for moralism, but it outrages me because I don't want to see this country go that way.
Well, you know, there is.
You ever see what happened? You know what happened to the Greeks? Homosexuality destroyed them. Sure, Aristotle was a homo. We all know that.
But
so was Socrates.
He never had the influence of television.
Yeah. You know what happened to the Romans? The last six Roman emperors were fags. The last six. Nero had a public wedding with a boy, and they stopped. You know that. You know what happened to the popes? It's all right, the popes are a bunch of nuns. That's been going on for years, centuries. But when the popes, when the Catholic Church went to hell, in, I don't know, three or four centuries ago, it was homosexual, and finally had to be cleaned out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what's happened to Britain. It happened earlier to France. Let's look at the strong society, the Russians. God damn it, they root them out. They don't let them around at all. You know what I mean? I don't know what to do with them. Now, we are allowing this in this country. We'll destroy the country. Dope. Do you think the Russians allow dope? Hell no. Not if they can allow it. Not if they can get to catch it. They send them up. You see, homosexuality, dope, immorality generally, these are the enemies of strong societies. That's why the communists and the left wingers are pushing each other. They're trying to destroy us.
Yep.
And I don't know, we can talk over it. I don't know why Anne will disagree with this, Mitch will disagree with this, Carmen will, and all the rest. But goddamn it, we have got to stand up to these people.
Fatal liberality.
That was disgraced former President Richard Milhouse Dick Nixon speaking with John Ehrlichman and H.R. Bob Haldeman in the Oval Office on May 13, 1971. Those White House tape recordings were made secretly by the president. They are now made available to the public through the website nixontapes.org. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. On today's show, we're looking back at the father of the modern drug war, disgraced former president Richard Milhouse Dick Nixon. Now, let's hear disgraced former president Nixon speaking with another cultural icon of that era, Art Linkletter. They met up in the Oval Office on May 18th, 1971.
And along with that, you've been moving around the country.
I speak to amateurs about four times a week to major conventions, generally a possible educational convention.
Terrific.
Because I feel, see, I've divided all the drug makers.
Oh, you're reaching.
Oh, I am. I know more
than the armed services.
I'm talking to some of the bases. Air Force Base,
McClellan. Because you know they're the same people when they have not going. But they feel uninhibited come in.
That's right. And they've been hooked by boredom and monotony and affluence and the presence of drugs. It's a perfect breeding ground for drugs. Worse than Vietnam, because there, in addition to being bored, they're bitter and they're disillusioned.
They tell me it's bad in Europe.
Yes, Bonavich has just come back.
Did you hear about Harris report? He said it's terrible.
Yes.
And it's really hard to know how to do it. You can't preach. And you don't want to just frighten.
No, what do you do? Well, I've been giving this a lot of thought. I have divided all the drug users into four categories. Just so you can get the situation. One of the curious experimenters, and that's like everybody who's growing up wants to know what it's all about. They may take it once or twice, and that's all they want to see. Then there's the ones who we call recreational users. They're the weekenders, like we used to, years ago, say, well, we'll have a party at school Saturday, but we won't drink every day. But they're weekenders. That's the second method. Then comes the dependent ones who become users every other day, the heads, freaks. Then there are the addicts. These are the hard users. These are the ones that are needling and swallowing and dropping acid all the time. Those are the four classifications. Now, I have said I can't do it all. I'm going to concentrate on the big numbers, which are the first two, the curious experimenters who are the young kids, and the occasional ones, because they can still be talked to.
The weekenders.
Yes, the weekenders. The recreational ones. They can still be talked to. They aren't filtered with the addict or a dependent's brain. So I am using those as my principal ones. So I'm talking to grammar school and high school, junior high school, on the basis of not telling them not to use drugs, but just telling them what it is, and encouraging the schools to use it as part of the school system. Not as a course on drugs, where you go in and sit down, the guy's going to lecture you on drugs, but right through all those, wherever it fits, in physiology and biology and education, it just goes in and out. So it becomes a part of your general knowledge. They aren't sat down to be lectured to. But for instance, in the study of animals, we show them spiders and all the symmetry of their spider webs and the beauty of it. And then you take them to the next place where a spider's been breathing marijuana, and you see the spider webs going in different directions and all shredded. And a kid at 9, 10, 11, 12,
remember that,
they'll say, my gosh, if the whole inherent genetic training of the animal is upset by this, it must do something to you. Those are the kind of things that I'm plumbing for. And then, of course, I bear down mostly on marijuana because that's the puberty right of the day. And I really give them a lecture on marijuana. And you see, the big problem with marijuana
is
you should know this.
2 weeks ago in California, but what did you say about it? I said, well, we're having commission on it before the commission. I'm trying to be very clear. Whatever it says, I'm against legalizing.
Absolutely.
I said, no, as far as penalties are concerned, that's something else. They should, of course, be uniform. But I'm against legalizing, period. But I think you've got to draw the line on the damn thing, because
that's right. That's
they say, well, it's the same as the booze. Well, maybe booze is bad, but the point is that you can maybe booze can lead to marijuana, can lead to speed, to LSD, can lead to heroin, and so forth. But basically, I mean, I know another way to look at it is this: if I may say so, with regard to if you get to a little more sophisticated audience who really care about destiny and a few of the other things. Mystery has ever been destroyed by alcohol. An awful lot of nations have been destroyed by drugs.
That's right.
Now, this is no advocacy for alcoholics. Good God, it's a horrible problem.
Terrible.
And you and I have many mutual friends, and we can envy in there with the grace of God go alive. All of us, you know. But believe me, it is true. The thing about the drug, once people cross that line from the frankly, the straight society to the drug society, it's a very great possibility they're going to go further, is it not?
That's right.
I don't know, but I
tell me about it. There's a great difference between alcohol and marijuana.
What is it?
The worst that you can have when you're in with other alcoholics is more to drink, so you'll throw up more and get sicker and be drunker.
And that also is a great, great restraint.
But when you are with druggers, you can go from marijuana, I say heroin. It's a big difference. If you're with a guy who suggests you have three more drinks than you should have, you're just going to get sicker. But if you're with a guy who you're already high and he suggests you try this instead of this, you can go much further. Now let me tell you one thing about marijuana you should know. That all of them, the word marijuana should never be used until you say, what kind of marijuana?
Oh.
There is every grade. Now they say, bad. What marijuana is bad? The mild stuff we grow in Wisconsin or the stuff in Morocco? The twigs or the leaves or the rosin? The kind of person who uses it? Is he psychotically sound or unsound? Is he inadequate?
All these things make a difference. So when you say marijuana, you're saying from 1 to 20. And you can never say marijuana. You've got to say marijuana from Acapulco, or marijuana from New Mexico, or marijuana from Illinois. Three different things. And what kind of a person is he? What kind of people is he with? I think that marijuana... Yes. There's a man named Dr. Harvey Powles. Dr. Powles is the chief clinical psychiatrist at the University of California in Berkeley. 5 years ago, they asked him for the paper what he thought of marijuana. He said, it's a light hallucinogen, probably doesn't cause any harm to anybody. This was played up, and he was worried because it was so played up. He spent 5 years studying it. About 2 months ago, he released his newest story, and it can all be put in five words. Pot smokers can't think straight. Pot smokers can't think straight. If you are a regular head and use it regularly, you are not using your priorities correctly. You are not judging what is most important. You have a kind of a will-less way of thinking. And he described it, and he studied many of them. As guys walking along a meadow that had the same appearance, but some parts were boggy and quicksandy and some were firm. And that's the kind of thinking that pot smokers have. And when people like that say these things, you can't tell me that this guy Brown from your NIMH, who was quoted this morning as saying that marijuana is really nothing and perhaps it should be given the same penalty as a parking ticket. Good night.
That was disgraced former President Richard Milhouse Dick Nixon speaking with television personality Art Linkletter in the Oval Office on May 18, 1971. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, in those recordings, there were some beeps that you heard. Those weren't for expletives. Those were for portions of these tapes that were removed for some reason, classified, national security, possibly too embarrassing, who can say. They don't actually have to give an excuse, but there are a few gaps like that in these tapes. Now, Nixon wanted to make marijuana the centerpiece of his drug war. He appointed a presidential commission to make sure it would work. He put an ambitious former governor named Raymond P. Schaefer in charge of it. And Nixon even dangled a federal judgeship in front of Schaefer to make sure that that commission delivered the report that the disgraced former president wanted. That's just not quite how it worked out, though. Turns out, Governor Raymond P. Schaefer had some integrity. He delivered an intelligent, well-informed report with a set of honest, reasonable recommendations. That is not what disgraced former President Richard Nixon wanted. Governor Schaefer served with honor and gave up a lifelong appointment to the federal bench in order to keep his self-respect and deliver an honest report. The report of the Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse was titled Marijuana, a Signal of Misunderstanding. It was delivered in March of 1972. That report endorsed the idea of decriminalization of marijuana, having found that the laws against weed were more of a danger than the drug itself. They did stop short of recommending legalization. On March 24, 1972, Nixon rejected the commission's findings outright.
Do you have a comment, sir, on the recommendation of your commission on drugs that the use of marijuana in the home be no longer considered a crime?
I met with Mr. Schaefer. I read the report. It is a report which deserves consideration and will receive it. However, as to one aspect of the report, I am in disagreement. I was before I read it, and reading it did not change my mind. I oppose the legalization of marijuana, and that includes its sale, its possession, and its use. I do not believe you can have effective criminal justice based on the philosophy that something is half legal and half illegal. That is my position, despite what the commission has recommended.
Mr. President.
Millions and millions of arrests and ruined lives later, we are finally starting to decriminalize and legalize marijuana, and the drug war is starting to come to an end.
For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it. You will interpret it. That's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Because, gentlemen, this is my last press conference, and I hope that what I have said today will at least make television, radio, the press recognize that they have a right and a responsibility. If they're against a candidate, give him the shaft. But also recognize if they give him the shaft, put one lonely reporter on the campaign who will report what the candidate says now and then. Thank you, gentlemen, and good day.
And that's it for this edition of Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to Professor Luke Nichter and the website nixontapes.org for making available these audio recordings, which were made by the Nixon administration. Can't get them at the National Archives right now. Can't get them through the Nixon Library right now. But thank heaven, nixontapes.org is there. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. A big thank you to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a webpage. It's at kboo.fm/freeculture. That's where you can sign up for the Free Culture Radio podcast. Free Culture Radio has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. You'll find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!